Welcome to episode 62 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, we dig into color contrast, different ways it can be measured, and approaches for managing and maintaining accessible color palettes. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/062. And now, on to the show.
Hey, everybody, it's Amber, and I'm here today with Chris.
Hey, everybody.
And Steve.
Hello, everyone.
And we are going to be talking about color contrast today. But what are we drinking?
So we are bringing back Allagash after a little while. For anyone who doesn't know, they're a brewery that is based out of Portland, Maine, and close to my old stomping grounds on the East Coast back when I was in the restaurant industry, which is a story for another time. But we used to bring in and drink a lot of their beers and even did like beer tasting menus with their stuff. And I've rarely had something bad from this brewery. I feel like they do a good job. So we're going to be trying Allagash Curcuma today, which is a Saison style beer that has fresh turmeric added to it. So for anyone who doesn't know, a Saison is a pale colored ale style beer that's usually pretty bubbly and should have like some fruity, spicy notes and is usually bottle conditioned. So like fermented in the bottle a little bit. So hopefully we get a little complexity, a little fruitiness.
Yeah. It's not a bottle. So it's fermented in the can?
I guess so. I don't know.
What does that even mean? I don't know what that means. Like instead of it's fermented small, just in this little batch, as opposed to in some steel container somewhere and then they bottle it.
Or sometimes I think it's both. So you might have you might get some fermentation in the tank and then they finish it in the bottle. And then they stop the fermentation at some point.
And that impacts the flavor when it's fermented in smaller, maybe it's not as strong.
Maybe, no. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm not a professional brewer. We'll see what it, we'll see what it tastes like. But I do like the vibe of this can. It's got, you know, it's very colorful, bright oranges and blues. And there's a little
purple. Yeah.
Little plant there on the side. That doesn't look like a turmeric root, though. I don't know if that's supposed to be a hop or what it is. But
it's all abstract.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shapes and colors.
Looks like grapes.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it does kind of. So.
And I've got my Accessibility Craft pint glass here.
All right. So we're going to
shop.equalizedigital.com.
right into the microphone. I don't think you're supposed to get that close to your mic. You broke the podcasting rules. All right, Chris is gonna give us a pour.
Yep. Oh, it's very pale, like straw yellow.
I'm gonna go
a little faster so I get a little bit of the head.
Have you ordered yourself a podcast, Steve, yet?
No. I don't know what I did to this beer, but it's blowing up on me.
See, oh no, it's all coming foamy off the top.
Allie the alligator's happy. She's swimming.
That is some foamy beer.
Okay, wait. You said Allie was a she. I always think Allie is a he.
You do? I don't know. Maybe Allie is just androgynous.
There you go.
I mean, it's an I guess alligators do have genders, but well, or they have sex.
Yes.
I
don't
know. It's a cartoon character.
Yeah. I think Allie is, I always say he, but it's funny that you said she. So, okay. This smells yeasty to me. When I smell it, it smells like bread.
Yeah, it smells like bread, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Do you smell any turmeric?
No.
This is weird because I eat turmeric all the time, but I don't even know if but it's always like mixed in with other things. So I don't know if I could place what turmeric smells like on its own.
Oh, it's pretty strong. I mean,
yeah, it's got a strong smell. It's definitely like if you smelled it, you'd be like, oh, that's turmeric. But this, like, I feel like I get a little bit of like banana, orange peel.
Well, that'd be the tropical, right?
On the nose.
I used to do these little shots of apple cider vinegar and turmeric. It was like a mix. You just do like one every day.
Is that like a healthy thing?
Yeah, I guess. But like
it was horrible.
It was so nasty. Like I had to like hype myself up for it every time.
Ooh.
All right, Chris took a sip. I guess that means we need to be drinking. I never like smell or taste the death that Chris does, but I know he like went through this whole like wine and all the tasting stuff with food at the Culinary Institute of America. So they like trained him to taste stuff, and I'm all like, okay.
I don't
think surprisingly full bodied for the color is what I immediately noticed. Like it's thick. At least it feels that way to me. Like not like in terms of texture. Like
yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't have like a light beer mouth feel or even like a, so the color of this reminds me a lot of like a Blue Moon kind of beer, but Blue Moons feel a lot lighter than this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely thick. I feel like it's got good overall like balance between the different elements. Like I'm getting a little bitter. I'm getting a little acidity. It's not like hitting me over the head with any particularly strong flavor, which is interesting.
Which is actually what I'd prefer. I mean, this is pretty good.
Yeah, it's subtle. Like it's not a punch you in the face kind of flavor. I still don't know if I get the turmeric, but maybe that might just be because I don't know what turmeric is supposed to taste like.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that's interesting about this is I don't really get the turmeric at all. I agree with you. I just feel like I feel like it's really balanced. I also like what surprised me about this too is it isn't particularly fruity, even though they say it should be like based on their description. Maybe a little banana, but it's definitely not super like citrusy. I'm not getting any like other tropical fruits, mango, pineapple, anything like that. Like it's very,
yeah, they say
it's very mellow,
tropically crisp. I don't think tropical applies to this flavor profile at all. Like we've had other beverages where it felt like it was floral or it was more fruity. We have a really nice beer from Odell right now in our fridge that I picked up that I hadn't tried before, which I've tried a lot because we used to live in Fort Collins where Odell is from. That's like super tropical. Like the moment you open it like this, I don't get tropical at all.
No, this is just kind of a beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it says earthy, like it does have an earthy profile to me. I get that a little bit. So what would you pair this with, Chris?
Like, I don't know. It's interesting, right? Because it is pretty full bodied. So I feel like it could stand up to something heavy. But it's also not, it's not super acidic or it doesn't have a super strong flavor. So like what immediately comes to mind for me is like, I would have this with like water crackers and brie or something like a soft fatty cheese, I think is what I would put with this particular beer. Like I think if you had anything like grilled or seared or like heavily caramelized or had any kind of really strong flavor, the food would overtake the beer entirely. Like because this beer doesn't have a very strong character to it, it's just really full bodied and balanced. So it's like I feel like it almost needs something subtle to go with it,
like a pizza.
Yeah
like a pizza. Salad. A salad. This is the girl beer. Salad. You go order a beer and a salad at a restaurant.
Beer and a pizza.
I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
So but. I actually think like with the flavor, what I think is it seems like it needs something tart to cut it a little bit to me. So like that's what made me think like when you said a cheese plate, but then I was sort of like, so I could see that. Maybe especially if you had like a sweet, like a jam something or sweet. Something also with it. But what made me think of a salad is I'm imagining this flavor contrasted with like a balsamic or like a dressing that's like a little tangy and sour. Like I think they would blend really well and differentiate at the same time. I don't know if that That's a thing. But that's what I think in my mind when I was having this.
You have a lot of beers with your salads?
Yeah.
No.
No. I mean, I don't have a lot of beer all the time. Yeah. Like when I said we had some beer in our fridge, I'm pretty sure I bought that six pack like a month ago. But yes.
That's good. I don't know. Like
I'm a vegetarian person, so I eat lots of salads when I go to restaurants because sometimes we go places that appeal to the other people in my family, but the only choice I have is a salad. So yes, that does not stop me from having beer.
I think it's good. I mean, I think I'm, you know, I don't really drink it much more than on this podcast, but like I'm a simple beer guy, right? Like I like it simple and it feels simple to me. Like,
so we've occasionally done with this a, like, you know, would you buy it again? And we've been working towards redesigning our website, and we're probably going to move Accessibility Craft into that. And there was a conversation about whether we should give beers stars, and everyone was like, no. But I'm like, I think we could give it thumbs down, thumbs up, thumbs in the middle emojis, right? Like that. So
do the wiggly hand.
Well, I don't know if there's an emoji for that, is there?
Yeah, I don't know. There probably isn't.
This is okay. Yeah. So where do you all land? Are you a thumbs up on this one?
Yeah. I think I am too. I mean, the bubble structure and the body, the full bodiedness of it, despite it like have being like lighter on the palate, for me makes it a little unique. Normally it's, I don't know, it's kind of a puzzle in that way.
Yeah.
It's always hard too because I just want to burp a bunch when I drink these, and we're doing a podcast.
Just, you know, subtly mute your microphone. All right, so I realized I was looking back through our past episodes as I was planning, and I realized we haven't really talked like dedicated about color contrast and some of the challenges that come up when you have a client that comes to you with a very light color palette or a color palette that literally just fails completely. And someone actually this week asked that question in our Facebook group. We have the WordPress Accessibility Facebook group. And so I was like, let's just have a podcast conversation about it. So I thought we should talk about color contrast today. You guys up for that?
Yeah.
No. No, come up with a new topic. Come up with a new topic on the spot. Just kidding. Now, so Amber, for people who are new to accessibility or just aren't well versed in this, what is color contrast and why does it matter?
Yeah, so there are basically color contrast is the measure of luminance between two different colors. And it comes into play most especially with text, but it can also impact UI elements, by which I mean things like the borders around a input field in a form, or if you have an icon that is functional and not decorative, like a icon for Facebook that links over to Facebook, that would be a UI element. And in the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, there are some different guidelines, both a AA and a AAA, that have specific, you can measure a contrast ratio between colors. And so that's kind of what it is. And I might pass off to Steve in just a second to explain what that is and how it's measured and the difference. But basically, why does it matter? Because if your contrast is too light, people with low vision, or maybe even people with typical vision, but that are looking at your website on a phone outside on a sunny day, will not be able to see everything very well. Or I've even seen some where the text was so light gray that I was like, I can't read this on my computer. And I like opened the DevTools and I changed the color because it was something I really wanted to read. And I had to make the color code darker. So it will limit people's ability to interact with the website or read the content. So do you want to explain a little bit more about like how color contrast is measured and the difference there?
Yeah. I mean, I can give like a high level overview. I don't want to get too nerdy about the formula, that goes into it, and this is not a math podcast, so but so I mean, like, so like what Amber said, like color contrast is measured using a mathematical formula that generates a contrast ratio from the brightness and color, or as Amber said, luminance, difference between the foreground and background colors. The contrast ratio ranges from 1 to 1, which would be no contrast, right? White text on a white background, to 21 to 1, which would be maximum contrast, which would be black text on a white background.
And so then it kind of just goes in between the two as you change colors
within that range. Yeah, yeah, totally. And then if we break it down between double A compliance and triple A compliance, so double A compliance it will kind of cover, you know, people with mild to moderate visual impairments. This range, this contrast ratio of at least 4.5 to 1 for normal text, which is below 18 point regular or below 14 point bold, and a 3 to 1 ratio for large text, which would be 18 point and above for regular fonts and 14 and above for bold fonts. And then on the AAA side, this will cover people with significant visual impairments, and the for normal text, it's a 7 to 1 contrast ratio, and for large text, it's a 4.5 to 1 contrast ratio.
Yeah. And the UI elements, it's like 3 to 1 is usually what we're looking for on the UI elements.
Right. So,
yeah. And there are a bunch of tools. I don't think anyone's doing mathematical calculations, right? Like everybody just Googles. We can probably link a couple of them in our show notes. And they like Google a color contrast thing. You put your two hex code in and it tells you the number, which is super helpful.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I will say too, on the, I have another link. It's kind of old. It's like almost 10 years old, but from the Nielsen Norman group, who does a ton of like actually scientifically based, research on that. It's it can be, they have a good article that talks about low contrast and how it hurts websites and user experience and that kind of stuff, so we can include that in the show notes.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. A WordPress native tool, Accessibility Checker provides reports directly on the post edit screen. Reports are comprehensive enough for an accessibility professional or developer, but easy enough for a content creator to understand. Accessibility Checker is an ideal tool to audit existing WordPress websites, find accessibility problems during new builds, or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis. Scans run on your server, so there are no per-page fees or external API connections. GDPR and privacy compliant. Real-time accessibility scanning. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to a paid version of Accessibility Checker to scan custom post types and password-protected sites. View site-wide open issue reports and more. Download Accessibility Checker free today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code AccessibilityCraft to save 10% on any paid plan. I feel like there was a trend there for a while on websites, like the minimal websites, and like there was just this trend to make the text as light and gray as possible.
Yeah. Shout out to Genesis circa 2010 to 2015 era.
Yeah, like exactly.
All that stuff. I remember that looking super trendy. And I remember, like, even back then, before I really understood this stuff, I was looking at that style and I was like, wow, this looks so sophisticated, you know, like with the super light colors and everything looking washed out. It was definitely a trend for a while.
Yeah. I mean, we have a client right now that we're in the process of redoing their stuff, and they came and their website text was light gray on white background. like their main body text. And I was just like, why?
Yeah.
So, all right. So you talked about the whole how we're currently measuring color contrast. And I think it could be interesting to talk just very briefly about WCAG Silver, which is a 3.0 version of WCAG. And there are proposed changes with that to how color is measured and guidelines and that kind of stuff. And I don't know if either one of you wants to jump on those or if we could just...
Yeah. Does anyone know what they're doing a new color contrast algorithm? And I'm seeing this thing thrown around called APCA. Does anyone know what that stands for? I haven't been able to find what that acronym actually stands for anywhere.
Wait a minute. Let me see.
While you're looking that up, I'll explain the limited amount I know about this because we're obviously all still testing against WCAG 2 and kind of just keeping one eye on the future. But you got it? Okay.
Advanced procedural contrast algorithm.
Okay. Okay. So very straightforward.
At least that's what ChatGPT tells me.
Okay. Well, thanks, ChatGPT. That's probably right. So what's interesting about this new thing that I've been reading is it's not just taking basically two criteria into account, like just the two colors and comparing them. It's like going to factor in what kind of font you're using, font size, colors of elements around it. I don't know. It seems more nuanced, but I don't know if that event is going to translate to like automated checks very well, right? Like how is a new automated check going to factor this in?
No, I mean, it's still mathematically based, so it'll factor it in. There's a helpful link that I can put in the show notes where you can look at the color contrast, like the subgroup and the things that they've been working on. And they actually have on the GitHub for WCAG 3, you can look at the guidelines that they're going in. And then if you click over, it goes to like Google Docs for each one where they're doing stuff like saying how it maps to WCAG 2, like if it's the same or different. And that sort of stuff. I think, you know, so if you're really interested in diving into this, you can watch as this is coming out. There's also some drafts on the WCAG 3.0 support resources on the W3C that are still available as well. And like one of the things they're changing, they're literally going to have one called like visual contrast of text as opposed to just color contrast, right? Like they're breaking it out and being a little bit more clear, which I think is good. But there's been a lot of instances where there's been controversy around this because the way they're measuring some things that currently fail WCAG 2 would pass in WCAG 3. An example of which is orange with white text. So, like on my beer can here, I've got Allagash and white text on this orange background. And I bet you if this were on a website and I were to color contrast that, it would fail WCAG 2. But I suspect it would pass WCAG 3. And we've even had a client, recently ask us this because we flagged stuff and they're like, well, what about this other thing? Because it passes in that. Yeah.
So. I mean, it sounds like in its luminance calculation that like currently the luminance calculation is the full spectrum, right? We use the same calculation formula for the whole spectrum. And it sounds like it's gonna kind of like segment out the spectrum a little bit and have like maybe different values for that. Like it says, luminance calculation, the calculation, the luminance of the background and the text colors. Unlike the simple luminance calculation used in WCAG 2.0 or 2.1, uses a more complex model that better accounts for human visual perception, particularly how we perceive lightness and contrast in different parts of the color spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's possible it might be better. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly sounds more complicated.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, there have been instances, and this is when it's been hard, right? Where a color with green doesn't pass WCAG 2. But when we, like, everyone who looks at it, or a color with orange or something, right? Like the white and orange, it looks like it passed, it, like, it looks really readable. And then you reverse the white text to a black text and it technically passes, but we all look at it and go, it seems harder to read.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're trying to solve for with this.
Well, it's interesting too, like when it talks about, you know, how the eye perceives color, like where it's trying to evaluate how a human, because right now it's a programmatic computer calculation, right? It's not taking into consideration our eyeballs. And like they were talking about like the human, how the human eye perceives contrast, considering factors like non-linear response of low vision in low light conditions, which you mentioned earlier, like if you're outside mm-hmm. looking on your phone, and the varying sensitivities to different colors. So I guess our eye has a different sensitivity response to each color.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, some colors are easier to see than others. I think I've seen things where, actually, no, I saw this recently in an article about the solar eclipse, which will have happened by the time this podcast yeah. episode comes out. But it was on NASA's website, and they were talking about why you should use a red flashlight, like instead of a white flashlight, because of how your eyes mm-hmm. respond to the difference yeah. in red versus white light and that kind of stuff. But that is, I think, to that point, right, that we don't perceive every color equally.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it in your home security cameras, right? When you use the night vision on like a home security camera, it's using red LEDs to project mm-hmm. that light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that I appreciate with this is that it's like font dependent, not just font size dependent. Thinking about, you could have something that maybe technically needs contrast, but if it's in a certain type of font, it may not actually be super legible.
Like a script or something that looks like handwriting.
And really thin. Like there are some of those fonts that are almost, it's like a one pixel line. Like,
Yeah.
So, okay. So a question that client, going back to that client asked us is, can we just use WCAG 3? Can we ignore the fact that it fails 2.2/1.2.0 because it's the same for all of that, and just use 3 and not change our colors? So what did we tell them?
So what's interesting about this, right, is it seems like there are instances where something that would pass this new APCA check would fail the current standard.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa. Right. And it doesn't seem like it's just really cut and dry. Like this standard being more rigorous or something. Like if APCA was more picky than WCAG 2, probably the answer would be yeah, because you're guaranteed to meet the current standard, even if you follow this new, more restrictive one. But it actually seems like maybe this is the other way around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could have an opinion on which way to go, right? Which is better, right? And two, there's an argument too, like, do we have tools to properly even evaluate that at this point? Maybe that GitHub does have something I could use to actually evaluate this. But like, then you got to think about the legal implications, right?
Yeah. So that was what we told them, which was no, don't use WCAG 3. Because all of the laws that are out there that we've seen are 2, and they're measuring against WCAG 2. All of the checkers, I mean, there have been lawsuits in the United States where it's literally said it has wave errors. Mm. Wave is checking against 2. And so if you know the lawyers are using that tool. And there's a really good article we can include in the show notes from Eric Egger, who is a accessibility professional from Germany. He used to work at Nobility, the nonprofit here in Austin that focuses on website accessibility. He's done some work with the W3C, and he was literally like, this is not ready yet. And the thing I fall back on and what I told them too is, yeah, there's a timeline. Like, well, actually, there's only a timeline for having a finalized draft of WCAG 3. There's not even a timeline for publishing. But the WCAG 2.2, granted, COVID played into this a little bit, but at the same time, it was delayed from when they said it was going to be published by more than 2 years. So at this point, I feel like WCAG 3, if they're going to have a draft in like 2 years, it's not going to be published for like five. And a lot changed. Like the first versions, I actually had an interesting thing because there was a draft blog post in our website that we had never finalized. Our content specialist wrote, and it was waiting on me to review. And just in case anyone's wondering, I am often a bottleneck. And it sat there for like a year. And then when WCAG 2 got 2.2 got released, I was like, oh, we should like put this, what's changed? And I was like, oh, I can start from this blog post. But like the success criterions were totally different. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And it's just things change a lot between the draft mode and the final published. And so I couldn't advise a client to go with the three knowing that.
Well, and the update on this one article from Yotil.net was actually put out yesterday. It was yesterday, a year ago, 2023, 328. So this was a year ago. They said WCAG 3 still isn't ready. In fact, there haven't been any meaningful updates to the draft since this article was initially published. I don't know if that's changed since this update was shared, but the proposed charter for the new WCAG working group has a completion date of Q2 2026. Which is probably unrealistic considering minor updates to WCAG 2 took between 5 and 10 years to release. To think they're going to release a new standard in 3 years, it's probably not going to happen.
No. Mm. We'll probably have WCAG 3
it's just way
like
too early.
Years from now.
Yeah.
So, all right. So I think shifting gears a little bit, let's talk about that question that we got in the Facebook group. What do you do if you get a client or you're working in-house at your company or your university and the brand colors don't sufficiently contrast? Do either of you have any thoughts about what people can do on that front?
I feel like our approach has been pretty solid in this respect. We provide them with this grid of possible alternative colors to their current ones that would work for accessibility and achieving sufficient levels of contrast in a design. And usually when they see that grid, they see that the colors that we have to change typically aren't all that different from their native colors, maybe a couple shades darker, but still very much looks like their brand. Amber, I think you even, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you've done this. I think you've even like gone into the, it like loaded their homepage on the browser and like stuck some of those hex codes into the browser to like mock up what their homepage might look like with some of these colors defined as a couple shades darker. I feel like I've seen you do that.
I've done that for some of our remediation clients. It's like so much faster than creating a whole design in Figma if you just need to change one hex code somewhere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like a cheat. Do that, and then you use Blipshot, which is a Chrome extension, to just take a full page screenshot, and then you'd be like, here's what it would look like if this hex code was different. Total cheat, but kind of nice one. So yeah, I've done that. I think the thing that is sometimes hard when you get the brand colors. This came up with a website we built where they had a light green. The light green worked with black, but it didn't work with white. And there were some instances where they wanted to use the green. So then we came up with like a WCAG green, which was a little darker. And when you put the two next to each other, they look very different. But when you have like the light green on the buttons with black text and then above it, somewhere else on the page, the like darker green that's just like text written in that color green, like it doesn't act like noticeably, like I can't tell the difference visually. So what I do think sometimes it's helpful to tell clients, like if they really push back about adjusting their colors, they're like, oh, this will feel different. Then I'll usually say to them, you know, how about if we put these in the initial design? And then once you see it, if it feels like it doesn't work, we can adjust. And they're usually pretty responsive to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because and then once they get it, they can't really tell the difference between like the little bit of a shade change.
Have we had any hard pushbacks on color?
Yes. So we have a client that their logo includes the word one, and it's like they have, I don't know, dark gray or something text for the first part. And then the one is white text on a light blue rectangle. And that's the way their logo is. And they really pushed back because we were like, we cannot do this white text on light blue everywhere. Your logo's fine. Logo doesn't need to have color contrast. It's fine. And we ended up, there was like one part on the homepage in the hero section where they were just like, it has to match our logo. There was a sentence that included the word one, and they wanted the one to look exactly like their logo.
Mm.
And so we definitely got pushback and it ended up launching and it still looks like that. But everywhere else on the website, it's just a one spot. So, I mean, it happens where they totally push back. But I mean, we have. So Colorado State University, we've done a bunch of work for. Apparently, I need a drink.
Yeah, more beer. Drink break, everybody. Chug the rest of your beer.
Hopefully Chris will edit that out or not. He'll leave it in.
No, leave it in. It's good.
We're leaving it in. We're doing it live.
Yeah.
Get rid of my cough, maybe. So we have a client, Colorado State University, where they've been very public about this, that they've been trying to work on their university brand colors are green and gold are the primary. And then orange is their top preferred secondary. And then they have all these like teal and yellow and lime green and a bunch of stuff that also doesn't work very well. And so, you know, it just takes a little bit of creativity in how you do it. And then you do end up with probably a more monochrome, like the green works fine. It's a dark green. So then it's a lot of green and white or maybe gold on the green because that works. But then the other stuff like the teals or the orange or the limes, it has to be done with like lines or like non-functional icons or like other decorative accents to pull in those other colors. It can fundamentally change the appearance of a brand. I mean, I just looked at that same client with the light gray text. They have like a full rainbow, but it's all bright colors and they were using them on white backgrounds. And so we basically were like, either you need to go for like kind of a dark mode kind of design where you have dark backgrounds so that you can continue to have text in these like colors, or we ended up choosing like they had a blue and a green that contrast. So now their website is almost all blue and green with a few little decorative accents in the other colors, but it's definitely not the rainbow that their current website looks like. So it does change the feel.
Yeah. So you can have colors that don't contrast with each other in your color palette, but then it comes to a point where you have to have some kind of guidelines on how those colors interact with each other, right?
So I like the eight shapes has a contrast grid where you can go plug in all the colors and basically puts every color on the left side and on the top and creates like a square, like a matrix, and it will tell you if they pass or fail on each one. So I'll do that for every client. And I find that to be really helpful. And then we give it to our designer and we're like, this is how you're allowed to use the colors. These ones can be used together and these ones can't. And we, by the way, as a rule, we do not accept anything that's AA18, which means large font. It has to pass AA because I don't want to have to get nitpicky about what the font size is on mobile just for the color contrast. So we only do AA and AAA. We will not accept, this is fine for large text.
Well, you know, that's interesting you bring that up too, because like the end user can control the font size, right? To some degree, like if the site's coded properly, right? Like, and if it passes at a larger font size and then they actually reduce their base font, like if they're like, if they don't have like a 16 point base font in their browser, right, and we're using rims or m's or something, right, and they've actually manually modified their base size, and it's actually smaller than it would fail for that one user, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. So no, so I think it's always better to do that. And you know, the thing that's interesting about color contrast is this is a really great example of something that happens usually before the website is even designed or like even built.
Yeah.
It's something that should be addressed during the design process. And I looked for that. I mean, I did a design review with our designer yesterday, and he had used a color that didn't pass contrast for the little down caret in the navigation menu, like the buttons that would, and I was like, nope, those need at least a 3-to-1. You got to change that color. So yeah. I just, every design, I'm like looking at them before I even show them to the client, because I don't want clients to get attached. And then I have to be like, oh, sorry, never mind. We can't do that.
What's been helpful too, from a developer standpoint, is, you know, we used to kind of like, we'd get the designs and, right, it would have like the button state, right? Like, it, or it'd be like, mm-hmm. we have these button states, but it wouldn't, the designer wouldn't necessarily specify what the hover or the focus states were of those. So the developer would kind of
have to make
an assumption of what it should be, and it didn't always pass. So now we have like a style guide in our designs. When we pass it off to the developer, it's like, this is what the hover state should look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really helpful, providing guidance for developers on hover states, focus states, sometimes in some instance that needs to be done. Or active states, like if you have like a current page indicator, like that's the thing to remember about color contrast, is it doesn't just impact what it is if you haven't used it yet, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you're on a nav menu and you have a certain style for your current page, it needs to look sufficiently different from the style for the other not current pages, so people can see where they are. And that might include color contrast if you're only using color to differentiate it.
And like on the focus state too, like, you know, like the default like browser blue that gets used for focus states, like it's fine on white, but like sometimes, like we're working on a site currently, it has like a purple background, right? And then you focus on it and it's got this blue, and that blue and purple are, so you need to modify the color of that outline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you mentioned like style guides. I think I've seen more and more largely bigger companies, but this is something we've been doing, and maybe some other WordPress agencies are doing as well. But I do think providing that brand style guides that address accessibility and color is really important. Whether you're having your designer creative so they can follow it, or having something that you can hand off. Like if you're a branding agency, which we're not, but if you're doing the branding for clients, you should definitely be checking for color contrast when you create the brand. And then when you create their style guide, include guidance on how they can use colors in what way. I know IBM and Slack have really good ones. The thing, I saw a presentation about IBM's, and they were talking about at AccessU last year, and they were talking about how they basically have gradients of colors. Like each of their colors has a gradient for each of the like percents from 0 to 100, basically, of that color. And the way they've made it easy for their team is they basically say you can calculate like a number, and then you have to have one that's like, if you choose a 60%, and you got to choose a 20% of the other color or something like that. But we can link to what their brand style guide is. And then I saw like, the University of Tennessee, when I was looking for other good examples of this, they have another one that's just on their website that shows like literally how colors can be used with one another. So I would say, like, if you're a branding agency, you really need to be thinking about creating these as part of your deliverable.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going for AAA Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a few AA colors that they allow, but
for hyperlinks. Yeah,
the thing is it really does seem like, to me, AAA, our color palette for Equalize meets AAA. And we worked really hard to come up with colors that would meet AAA. I would not say that all of our client websites meet AAA, but I do think the body text always does.
Yeah.
And ideally the link colors do, but I don't know that the heading colors or other accent colors always do. I think if you can meet AAA, you should.
Yeah, I like this. It says orange is the UT system's brand color, but avoid using this color for text on a white background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's like what CSU has in theirs, right? Like they're literally acknowledging that their brand colors were created probably, I don't know, 20, 50, however many years ago, a long time ago, right? Before anyone knew about this. And so they're trying to be like, yeah, this is a brand color, but you shouldn't use it. So I think it would be interesting to talk about color modes in designs. We don't currently give clients as part of their base. Like if they wanted to add it to their project, of course we would, but not everyone does. Like this is your light mode. This is a dark mode where it responds if they set an operating system preference to a dark mode, or maybe even like on the WordPress Accessibility Day, having a toggle where people could put it in light mode or dark mode, or a high contrast color mode. And I've been wondering, like, is that something we should include or try to push more clients to build websites that way? What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, I could speak technically. Chris might be able to answer from a, a budget.
Will they actually pay for it?
A client's budget perspective. But from a personal, like from the personal side, I actually like it. I like when a website respects my, because I like dark mode everything. I'm like dark mode all the things, right? And I kind of like it. And I'm sure there's times where it happens and I don't even notice it, right? Like, you know, and that's from the perspective of, fully sighted person, like light or dark. Now, the high contrast, I don't know what that would look like. Maybe I should set my settings to high contrast and go to some websites and see what that looks like. But
so WordPress Accessibility Day.
Yeah.
We did. So Ryan Bracey is on our organizing team and his company, Second Melody, did the designs and did design out. This is what light mode would look like. This is dark mode. They didn't in the designs do high contrast, but then we worked with Joe Dolson was the primary person on the organizing team who developed the website, and Nick Croft, the two of them. I think Nick did a lot of the color mode stuff. But we worked to create the high contrast. So if you turn on high contrast in your OS, you will get a high contrast version of that website. Now, I don't know how different it is, because to be honest, the colors on that website are like really light colors with black. So it might be only a few differences. In a lot of cases, it might be high contrast already. But
yeah, I'm not noticing a lot of difference.
Difference? No.
But like you said, maybe it's.
Yeah. But for sure, like it also has the toggle where people can turn it off and on, but it will default to whatever your operating system preference is, which is always funny for me because I have my computer in light mode. So I get it in light mode on my computer, but I have my phone set to dark mode. So when I go, like, it looks different on my two devices when I go there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
What is, go ahead, Steve.
There's a technical, like there's a technical investment to doing that, right? Like, so like you got to think anytime we create like a custom module or component, right, that we've got to consider those three scenarios or four scenarios, right?
Like three, yeah, light, yeah, dark, high contrast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess you wouldn't need high contrast mode if all of it was high contrast to start, but I don't know if everything would be. That's probably unlikely. And it's not just the investment in the dev side and extra dev time to write the CSS for it. It's also probably design, because as we mentioned, developers do better when they have design instructions.
Yeah.
No offense.
The other thing I'll say is in the conversations I'm having, nobody's really bringing it up. I'm also not selling it. Like, I'm not like, hey, do you want your website to have light mode and dark mode? Right. It hasn't really come up. I think the other thing that's interesting about this, right, is if you go and you look at the color contrast guideline subgroup for the W3C, there's a little note in there, and I mean this is probably 5+ years away, right? But there's a little note in there that they're considering adding a specification in WCAG 3 recommending developers embed a bright dark mode toggle switch into websites that cookies the user and remembers the preference, which is interesting to say the least.
Yeah. Why would you do that? Why would you not just
do it?
Respond to their operating system preference. Yeah. That seems weird.
Well, I'm literally reading what's in this GitHub.
Well, as we said, it probably won't be published for 15 years and there may be many changes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. By then, depending on who you talk to, generative UI is going to save us all, right? So. Right.
Mm. 15 well, years, we'll all be neuro-linked into...
Mm-hmm. So I have a question for you. I get why you probably aren't trying to sell it because it's an extra budget line item and it's not like our websites are quote unquote cheap, right?
Yeah.
And if they're not and you haven't seen people asking for it, but what did occur to me is we have built some like portals or like web applications that have WordPress behind them. I mean, some of them even have like a Vue or a JavaScript front end. So I don't know if that even counts as sort of like a, almost like a headless type of implementation that's using more API, right? Should those have dark mode because they're more of an app?
Maybe.
Like maybe that's a line where you think about it, right? Like if you think about the apps you use on the phone or the things that you might expect to function more app-like, maybe there's more of an expectation on users that they could go into their profile and set a preference for light mode or dark mode.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too from, you know, if a user requires dark mode other than the fact, you know, other than the way I want it, just because I like everything dark, right? Like if they actually need it for their, you know, because of some visual impairment, like, and then they turn it on and they barely see any difference on the web, right? Like, yeah, it's a little discouraging, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've been thinking about with our website that I think it would be cool to design that and build that. Maybe we phase it. Like we launch the new website just in light mode and then we add the dark mode later or vice versa. We only do one mode first. Mostly because I think it's kind of cool to showcase what you can do from an accessibility standpoint. And that was part of why we did it on the WordPress Accessibility Day website, because we were like, we wanted to show people like, this is a thing you can do. Because a lot of people don't even know. And I think that if you are someone who, you know, you work with clients or you're trying to like sell them on accessibility or you're trying to, you know, you're someone who wants to show like what accessibility looks like, then having that on your own website is probably a good thing to do.
Yeah.
But do you think people would buy it, Chris?
I think it probably depends on the customer and their audience to an extent.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Well, I think that there are certain customers that are more interested in maximizing the utility of the experience their website users get versus others. And there are some people who care the most about having the coolest and most advanced version of a website that is possible that can be built versus those that are more interested in balancing budget with utility, if that makes sense. So I think there are certain types of people that want the bragging rights, you know, they want the Ferrari equivalent of a website, right? And then there are those that don't.
Yeah.
Or they're limited by, but you know, budget, you know, like time, budget.
Yeah.
But this is definitely something where I can say, you know, adding a feature like this 100%, like there's no question. It would be potentially a significant budget increase depending on the complexity of the website, because you're talking about having to create sets of rules in the design system and in the build itself to account for this user preference everywhere, right? That's what all of accessibility is to an extent. I mean, this feels like it impacts more of the front end than what most of accessibility is, which is just making sure something's coded correctly and meets some standards.
Sometimes it's invisible, accessibility. Invisible to the people who are not using screen readers. Yeah. Well, okay. So I think maybe as a final question before we wrap up here, we're going to assume most clients only have the budget for one mode. And I think it would be interesting to talk about, should we all change what we're doing and just be designing for dark mode? Because right now, I think most of us, most agencies, most designers design a light mode version of a website. It might have some reverse sections, but it is a light website, right? Is that wrong? Would it be better for accessibility if you're only doing one to design darker websites?
Yeah, what's the statistics, you know, like on users, you know, that would prefer light versus dark, or that would benefit from, right?
Yeah. So I did a little bit of digging on this before the show, of course, because I was like, I think this is a question we should talk about. And I wanted to figure out, I'm very like scientifically focused. Like I wanted to know, like, are there actual studies on this? Not just some person saying their opinion on a blog. So we'll put all these links in the show notes, but I found a few. So from University of Illinois, there was a study that found that was related to willingness to buy products and like food products specifically. And they looked at like menu preference. And this was interesting because it said that the willingness to buy products when the text was on a light background, people were more willing to buy it when it, or sorry. Yeah, so they were more willing to buy it when it was on a light background. They also thought the food product was healthier on a light background. So if you have like a packaged good and you're trying to make it look like organic or green or super healthy for you, people will perceive it to be that healthier or better for them if it's on a light background versus a dark one. But they did find it that women preferred light menus versus men preferred dark menus. So I don't know if that's an overall stat that if you have a male audience, you might do better with a dark mode website versus a light mode website. There was also some stuff from Harvard about dark versus light maps. You know how like Google Maps has like a dark mode and that kind of stuff, and like how, you know, dark mode is definitely always better if it's at nighttime. So there could also be an interesting thing if you're building an app or you have a certain kind of website where you expect more traffic at night for one reason or another, that maybe that might make sense. I did find one on PubMed, which is like a United States government website that does medical studies and research and correlates them all, so you can go find them, where it said eye tracking and subjective data said that dark, when they like tracked eye tracking, dark mode websites were a higher cognitive load for older adults, especially in a bright environment. So they were harder for older adults to read.
You know, it's weird, like an interesting thing with that is like when the phone switched over to like OLED screens, like you know, where it's like individual pixels of light. Like I noticed like on dark mode, like on my phone, if the brightness was turned up too much, I felt like the text was just like screaming at me, you know?
Because yeah, which is a whole thing we don't have time to get into, but there is a thing such as too much contrast for some people can have hard time with like straight black on straight white. Like usually we'll do like an off, like a dark gray for text instead. And so that, maybe that's the same thing that you were experiencing. It was too much contrast. Nielsen Norman Group also has a whole article about dark mode versus light mode. This one's not quite as old. It's from 2020. And they said that visual performance tends to be better in light mode, but some people with cataracts or related disorders perform better with dark mode. Long-term reading in light mode may be associated with myopia. So if you are an ebook reader, you probably want to make sure your ebook is in dark mode. But yeah, so I think based on all of those, that light mode is better.
But, yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. I don't know. That's what I've got on color contrast. I don't know if any of you want to add anything towards the end. Any words of wisdom for convincing clients or internal stakeholders to have better color contrast?
Well, there's always the fallback of if your customer continuously insists on having inaccessible color combinations for their website, you can always make them sign something that absolves you of any liability. Yeah. And maybe that conveys to them the seriousness of the request, if nothing else does.
No, I mean, I think we've suggested that to clients before and they've been like, wait, never mind.
Yeah. We're not signing off on this.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got it in your contract that you're going to make certain things accessible, like that was the thing with the one where I was saying the white text on blue box. I'm pretty sure we asked them to sign because we're like, we literally put in our statement of work that the whole homepage would be accessible. So you're going to have to sign saying that you're releasing us from the, at least this component of the homepage because.
Right. Yeah, totally.
But yeah. Color contrast is, it's an interesting conversation with stakeholders, but it is definitely a battle worth fighting.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And this is a very good beer, by the way, Chris, good pick. Yes.
So oh, thank you. Thumbs up on the.
Most of the way through it.
Yeah.
Allagash Kirkuma.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that?
Curcuma is what I would say. But,
all right. But, well, good job.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Be back all right. soon.
See ya.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.